Okay. So shall we start with a bow?
Do you want a little table to put that on?
You can sign the form?
Yeah. Let me bring one.
Okay.
I'll be quick.
Well, we'll bow anyway.
Yeah. Can bow on.
Bow on. All right, so I was asked to give a talk tonight, and something jumped on me, like maybe last week. It was a talk about impermanence. And then I decided to connect it with appreciation. Sakyong has been telling us, so Sakyong is the head of Shambhala, for several years anyway, he's been telling us we probably would be better off if we would appreciate more.
We should go around and say our name.
That's probably true. Before we do that, yes, I'm Bill. I'm talking.
I'm Barbara. I'm not.
I'm Richard.
I'm Tim. Eric.
Diane. Carolyn.
Gary.
Ted.
Carol.
Sharon.
Trudy.
This is still me. So anyway, we'll see if we can get this put together with impermanence and appreciation. So there's something that we learn in Buddhism. It's called the three marks of existence or characteristics, and they're impermanence, and suffering, and egolessness or non-self, and they're related. So, impermanence, basically the idea of impermanence is just noticing what's going on. and it happens in all kinds of scales. Back in April, we watched a movie here called Journey of the Universe, which basically took us from the Big Bang to today. Our universe has been changing ever since the Big Bang. And we happen to appear now. If we'd appeared earlier, there wouldn't have been any Earth to appear on. but we're here. So, and again, things are changing. You know, the universe is evolving. Someday the Earth probably won't exist. The Sun won't exist as our Sun. So our universe is changing. Also, part of that movie was the Earth itself. You know, the Earth was formed, and after a few billion years, somehow life started. And, you know, there were all kinds of life living in the water, and then up out of the water. And we had dinosaurs and all kinds of interesting things. And here we are. You know, we're born this time. If we'd been born a few million years ago, we'd probably be dinosaurs. Wouldn't be meeting like this. So, you know, the world is evolving. And you know, if we were born a million years from now, who knows? We don't know. So it's changing. The world, our world is changing. And not only in the life forms, but, you know, the mountains come and go. There's this myth or something maybe of Atlantis, which was a continent that once existed. And we know that the tectonic plates move around, so continents change. So the Earth itself that we think of as so solid is really impermanent. All that solidity isn't. If you've ever sat through an earthquake, it changes your view of the Earth. That it's not so solid. And then we have like countries. We have these all these different countries. If you look in the Middle East, you know, 120 years ago, those were not the countries that are there today. It's all changed. Well, and a few hundred years ago, this was not the United States of America. So countries change, and we're here in this country now. But for those of us who, most of us, I guess, here, if you look back maybe 50 years, this was a very different country at that time. You know, we had the Vietnam War, and that was not a great fun time from that perspective. But on the other hand, most of us, when we were growing up, we always had the idea that things were getting better. You know, our life would be better than that of our parents. And I don't know that that's the case anymore for kids growing up. So it's changed, and we don't know where it's going. So that changes. Cities change. I moved to Boulder in 1970. It was a town or a city of about 50,000 with a university of, I don't know, 10 or 15,000. Really nice little place. It's not the Boulder we have today. And at that time, Longmont, I thought of it as a cowboy town. You know, a bunch of hicks out there. It's not the same. It's a lot bigger. And it's different. So all of this stuff is so impermanent. And the things we have, we buy new cars, great new car, you're driving down the road, and, you know, 5 years from then, it's sort of a bit of a clunker maybe. And certainly 15 or 20 years later, it's time for a new car. So there's no such thing as a permanent new car, permanent anything. Nothing stays the same. You know, our houses deteriorate. We got to do constant maintenance on them. Gardens, you have to put work into gardens and yards. If you leave things alone, they deteriorate. And we have bodies, us. And, you know, I would guess that 90 years ago, none of these bodies existed. You know, and 90 years from now, then they're not going to be here. And so they change a lot. If somebody who knew you when you were 5 years old saw you today, they may not recognize you. It just doesn't look the same. It doesn't feel the same. What we had for bodies when we were 18 are, there's some similarity, but there's a lot of differences. So our bodies change. And if we have people in our lives that we see every year or two, what happens is you look and then you see them next time and think, oh, they've changed. You know? But we haven't, because every day we get up and look in the mirror and it looks pretty much the same. But it changes. We get the same changes that these other people get, but they're less noticeable because we're there looking all the time and don't see. And our bodies are changing constantly. You know, we eat, digest our food, and it's always going on. And basically, it's never the same. I think it's, was it every 7 years, all the cells in our body are replaced, so we're not even the same body anymore. And then, when we start to meditate, we find out a lot of the things that we think are us, our thoughts and our emotions. I think, at least in my experience before I meditated, you know, I knew who I was and what I was thinking and what was going on until I started to meditate and then realized, what the heck is this? And we find out that things happen and we don't really know where they come from. Where do all these thoughts come up from? It's just wild. We do have some control over our thoughts. You know, we can figure out that we're going to go to the store today or go somewhere. Or, you know, there's some control, but there's a lot of thoughts that come up that they seem to come out of nowhere. And then emotions come up, and they have some kind of a basis. They're usually associated with thoughts. But they, neither the thoughts nor the emotions are permanent. You know, we can feel bad for a day, a week, a month, a year, but every now and then something happens and we forget that we're feeling bad. You know, the sun comes out, we slip on the ice, we forget everything, and it's not there. So what's happening here? Everything is impermanent. And that basically is how things are. And we can observe in our lives, things are impermanent. Everything is impermanent. You know, my body, my mind, my world, everything. It's impermanent. It's not there. So that's sort of just a basic fact. It's all impermanent. And so everything should be fine, now that we know that. But what happens is, there's me. Me. And I want to hang on to something. What's me? What is it? I want this is me. These are the thoughts I have. But I can't get it. I can't grasp it. And it's the grasping at me or my world. That's the second part of the three marks of existence. That's the suffering. There's the grasping is causes our suffering. And the third part, the non-self, is basically that there's nothing there to grasp. There's no solid, essential me. That's the egolessness. It's really non-existent. And it basically, because we have this impermanence, that's just the way things are. It's not a terrible thing or a wonderful thing. It's just it. That's what there is. But it causes so much trouble. it's suffering, and the egolessness comes from grasping onto things. So that's impermanence. And I thought that rather than connect it at this point to appreciation, I would rather have a discussion and see how appreciation connects to impermanence. Or does it? Any thoughts? Yeah, Richard.
The only thing we can really change is our view of things. We can change ourselves, but we can't change the world. We can't make things happen. We think we can. So what we need to change is what we can change, and that's the way we feel about things, the way we look at things, our attitude. All of these things we can change. And Buddhism helps us to make these changes. So impermanence is a very real thing. And in looking at impermanence, we know we're changing all the time. And we don't see it to change, except when we can experience something. And to experience something new is always a good thing, to change the way we think, the way we do things, the way we treat people, constantly changing. And it's bodhicitta that really everything points, all the Dharma points to bodhicitta.
And what's bodhicitta?
Bodhicitta.
What is it?
It's loving kindness. It's love that we can't feel for everybody, but we must feel for everybody. and it's probably the hardest thing to change, is our view of love. What is it? I've talked enough.
Actually, I'd like to say something about appreciation. I think a lot of us have a kind of naive view of appreciation, which is like you value the nice things in life and you want to push away the unpleasant things. But I'm kind of just coming to explore the idea that the bad things are actually worthy of appreciation also. It's easy to appreciate, you know, like falling in love and things like that. But like making a mistake and learning from it. I mean, if you didn't make mistakes, how could you ever, you know? So I screw up and then, oh, wow. And you know, my weaknesses is what allows me to open my heart to other people that share those weaknesses, you know? So you, in that kind of weird sense, that's worthy of appreciation also.
Instead of calling those things mistakes, I'm a retired nurse and I took care of children on ventilators.
Yeah.
And the developmental sequence in the first year of life, you know, that they don't know about ambition and children just know how to feel. And what seems to work comes from losing their balance and gaining their balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have to lose their balance to learn how to eventually make one step. So I like to call that the wobble factor. And nice. If we think of that as the wobble factor, that that it's not a mistake, it's how we gain our balance, how we learn our balance. And it's again, it's change, it's constantly changing. But if we have some ability to be present with what's going on, then we can notice those things.
Yeah.
And people seem to, when I talk about wobble factor, they seem to relax.
Yeah.
Because it's like a life without mistake. It's in a certain way. Of course, there could be real mistakes if we hurt people. I mean, that's not a wobble factor. There's some intent. But in general, I don't think that's the usual experience people have.
I like that, relative to the idea of making mistakes, that actually, you know, there's this notion of continuing to try to move forward in that wobble.
Yeah.
And also the balance part of it is what you get from the wobble that you learn that helps you take the next step. That seems to be really, that seems to be something that very basic to all of us and that is also worthy of appreciating fully because it's the way we are. I think that's what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was thinking about my mother and my work with hospice at different times in my life and death. And many people, I mean, I feel I have a full appreciation for death and dying, the process of that. And that is a little unusual in some way, it seems. But, I mean, I'm just saying that's another one of those things that's where you're looking really clearly at impermanence and experiencing it, but you have a complete opportunity to open to that experience, and then when you actually feel your presence in the world, for me, I appreciate everything so much more.
Yeah.
each moment. So that's something I've learned from being with people who are dying, and then also just how little we have to crank anything up in ourselves to be able to be there for someone and be available. You know, it is just a matter of our presence contributing to that process, and for me that's a big teacher in general.
I've been thinking since this gentleman, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Richard,
I'm Sharon. I was appreciating the wobble factor, and when I heard you talk, it reminded me of my own struggle with my less than gentle self. And what I would like to remember and not just talk about tonight is I have this really strong sense of how, when you were talking, of how it's like, I want to make this big change in who I am. And because it's just got to go away. And then I thought about how much loving kindness there was in the wobble factor. And then it reminded me, you know, that a friend of mine and what my journey right now is to just make a shift in my thinking. Just shift, just a little bit. Sort of like what you were saying, I think. But just, you know, like, change your attitude. And I'm like, with me, I've got to change my attitude. You know? And it's, no, I just need to shift my attitude. I just need to kind of move this thought over there and look. And so that was what, between the wobble factor and what you said, I was appreciating.
Good.
And when you were talking, Richard, my first thought was, I can't even change. You were saying the only thing you can change is your attitude and yourself. And I'm like, I don't know that I can do that, even that much, right? But I do think, like your idea of a shift, I think I can pick up my focus and move my focus. And then that creates a shift, yeah. Right? But if I intentionally try to bully myself into a new attitude, that just never works.
I have this root problem with the whole thing, which is that there's like this feeling of you don't appreciate till it's gone, which is a theory of like it's a beautiful day and then it's over with, which is the impermanence. But then if you go back to the I, which is supposed to be this person who's attaching feelings to things, who somehow gets caught up in being attached to who they are and what they feel, I feel like it goes kind of back to some kind of egolessness, which somehow cycles around. So I have a hard time with, I know each of us appreciate things and don't appreciate things, and it cycles back and forth, but I know we all attach our feelings to things, whether we appreciate or not, or whether it's good or bad. Sometimes I just wonder how you get to that place where you're not in the I so much. I appreciate, I don't like, I. You know what I'm trying to say?
Right. But even within appreciation, there's ego.
Right, and that seems to be what, I don't know.
Right.
We cycle around a lot with our selves in the world, and we get upset when something good changes.
Uh-huh.
Like our health is great and then all of a sudden it's not, and there's just like this impact in our world that's like, things like that.
Well, one thing that there's a benefit in getting older. It's called experience. If you look back on your life, or if I look back on my life, there's things that I went through that at the time I thought were pretty lousy that turned out to be great things in my life. You know, and so it's basically a lesson that you can't really judge what's going on. You know, that if something's happening, you know, I don't like it, but I can admit that I don't like it, but that doesn't mean I can't appreciate it. Because, you know, hindsight is really good. Yeah, but it doesn't work in the present moment, you know. So there's a... I think that the thing that goes with this impermanent stuff and all the, is that there's a richness to our lives that we don't appreciate. You know, I've said this a number of times, that we pay good money to go to the movies to feel really crappy at times, wonderful at other times. But when some of those things happen in our lives, we feel terrible. But, you know, why am I willing to spend $15 to go to a movie that makes me feel how I would in my life, then I feel terrible about it? What's going on?
I was going to say that what you're making me realize about appreciation is that I think of it, I've thought of it as a way out of suffering. If I just could be more grateful and I keep, you know, a gratitude list. And I think there's a lot of popular thinking around gratitude as a way to get out of yourself and suffer less. But now I'm beginning to wonder. I'm not so sure that that's right. Yeah.
Well, the suffering is basically wanting, what the Sakyan called it, wanting there to be another now. You know, the what's happening now, I don't want. Yeah. Or I want it to go away, rather than, oh,
or
this
I
is interesting.
It to last forever and it doesn't go away.
Right.
Yeah.
There's some clinging in gratitude.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I hadn't really thought that before.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a phrase that comes out of the Japanese tea ceremony called Ichigo Ichie. Ichi means one, and Ichigo means this time, and Ichie means this meeting.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of like this time only. This is all there is. It has seven different meanings, but it's basically just a sense of the preciousness of the moment, that it, because it's impermanent, it's going to change anyway.
Yeah.
And this one time, you have a host and a guest, but you could say that every time we speak, it's an offering, because it leaves our body, you know, like vibrations leave our body. And so every time we communicate, it's an offering, really, ultimately. And so, in terms of appreciation, gratitude comes from being thankful. Well, if you don't believe in a God, then it's mostly about this opportunity that you have in this moment. And then underneath that is really a grace. And so that's a mind shift when you can feel grace, in the sense of you can just appreciate and let go of any kind of soap opera mind, and just see this moment as a unique moment of experience. And then we say we're graceful. Are you grace at the table? And it has to do with being in that gentle, it's really having a gentle appreciation of the moment. And so that to me, you could say, is a moment where you're in grace, where you have that kind of state of mind shift. And that comes from, I think, the ability, it doesn't only come from meditation, but meditation gives you an opportunity to shift your state of mind. So,
you know, there, you made me remember a saying that I have heard at different times in my life, where somebody is said to have graced you with their presence.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were thinking of it?
It has multi-dimensional. Chögyam Trungpa loved the Oxford English Dictionary. When he came to Oxford, it was one of his major cultural discoveries that he could actually have a window into the English language. Mm. And so you find all these aspects of words.
But I love your idea of grace as the basis of gratitude, because I think it's easy for me, like if I try to sort of chart, you know, list all the things I'm grateful for, there are things I've received or things I've achieved or things I've been lucky to have, but that's not as fulfilling or substantial mm-hmm. as just the grace of a moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes. Yeah. Often when you look back in your life, it's the moments that you remember, not the big stuff.
Yeah,
moments.
The stuff you got. Yeah. Although it's easy to forget to be grateful that I have enough to eat, I have reasonably good health, I have opportunities. I mean, all those things are not insignificant.
Right.
But there is an element of grasping in being grateful for them. It's because I want more. I want more of that.